WBEZ is supported by Rivian. Off-road electric Joyride ride-alongs are available in downtown Chicago in a Rivian truck or SUV from September 19th to the 21st at the corner of East Illinois and North Michigan. Plus, a chance to win a two-night stay at a luxury Chicago hotel. Terms apply. No purchase necessary. Entry period is September 12th through the 21st. Must be 21 to enter. Odds of winning depend on number of entries. Visit Rivian.com/Chicago Sweepstakes to enter.
America is changing, and so is the world.
But what's happening in America isn't just the cause of global upheaval. It's also a symptom of disruption that's happening everywhere.
I'm Asma Khalid in Washington, D.C.
I'm Tristan Redman in London, and this is The Global Story.
Every weekday, we'll bring you a story from this intersection, where the world and America meet.
Listen on bbc.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons. This is Reset, and it's time for us to ask, hey, Chicago, what is that building? What do you get when two of the best architects collab on a one-of-a-kind design in downtown Chicago? Well, you get the beautiful Charnley Persky House in the Gold Coast, designed by Frank Lloyd Wright and Louis Sullivan. And with just one walk through the centuries-old home, you can almost feel a sense of competition that may have been spurred in the two men, each putting forth their absolute best work. For our series, What's That Building?, we've been touring historic houses this summer. And in this stop on the tour, our architecture guide, Dennis Rodkin, took me to the Charnley Persky House for a visit. I got a closer look at this unique property, which really stands out compared to its neighbors on the block. Let's listen to how that went.
So we're back on the road again, Dennis, this time in the Gold Coast. Beautiful views of the lake. And look up, the Air and Water Show. It's happening.
Yeah, I'm sorry I brought you here on a day when we need to record and there are jets flying overhead.
We chose the perfect time. But tell us, why did you bring us here? And remind me, where am I standing right now? Astor Street and...
And Schiller.
Okay.
We're at Astor and Schiller. And before I show you what we came to see, I want to set up a contrast. First, look at these houses across the street from us, down this block.
Mm-hmm.
Very ornate. Lots of peaks.
Absolutely.
Lots of carvings. Lots of... sort of Victorian styles, although these are not Victorian houses.
Beautiful.
So then in 1892, this house is completed, and look how different it is. This is the Charnley House, the Charnley Persky House.
Oh, it looks totally different.
Right. Rectilinear.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so emphatically rectilinear. Look at the brick. This is that Roman brick that's long and
mm-hmm.
low. The whole house is horizontal. You've got a cornice on top that's flat. You've got this loggia. The windows, everything is very rectilinear compared to or contrasted from all the curves and peaks and arches
and
we
just
see
verticals
all around.
Right. Yeah. So let's get a closer look at the front door, shall we?
Sure.
So now we're approaching the front door, and of course I can see that loggia that you alluded to earlier, but let's stop at the door first. Wow, what a statement.
It is, and I think if you're a Chicagoan who has paid attention to Louis Sullivan, and it's hard not to if you've been on State Street or many of the other places where his work was, not to recognize that you've arrived at a Louis Sullivan building.
Yeah.
The ovals and the leaves, the very artful geometry here, you get a real feeling that this is Louis Sullivan.
Such beautiful details there. But this wasn't all Louis Sullivan, right? You had two of the best, essentially, working on this.
You did. And that's why we sort of think of this house as a twofer, because Louis Sullivan gets the commission and it's being done for his firm. But Frank Lloyd Wright, his draftsman, contributes mightily. And we'll talk inside about how much his contribution was or wasn't, because that's sort of up in the air. But part of what you can really see is this horizontality. Even if it wasn't his idea for this house, it is something he uses in many houses later.
And Dennis, I got to look up because that loggia.
So much more of the same, right? So
wow.
Here we see it on the door, and then you look up and it's like an explosion of details on the bottoms and sides of the beams, on the wrap around this porch, or it's second
like,
story.
It's like the fanciest balcony I've ever seen.
It is. Yeah, it is. You can imagine sitting up there on a summer day and everybody
sipping
walking
tea.
by, sipping tea, and everybody walking by is looking up at your loggia, your balcony,
right,
to look at all this detail that's placed on it. See, we've got these sort of eye-shaped ovals. There are vines. As you go farther up above the columns, you see sort of rotated squares. We're going to see them inside.
Right.
And there's more of that flat copper cornice that we saw on the corner. And you can see it's in steps on the ends, and then it steps down into the middle to make this loggia sort
beautiful.
Of an intimate space.
I love your reference in the copy of this story where you talk about just the details being like tattoo designs almost.
It feels like it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's fine craft work by carpenters, but it feels as if somebody has tattooed a pattern across the front of the house.
Right. The privacy that the columns provide, I believe, it adds a little something to me. Like, because right now we're standing right outside this house, and there could be people sitting on there,
right,
sipping tea as we just...
And look how many people have walked or driven past
and
us in the few
minutes. And we can't tell because right. It would be nice and secluded almost.
You could be sitting up there drinking tea and looking out at us, and we can't see you.
Feels like an exclusive club that we're not invited to.
Well, I think we are invited because we get to go inside.
Do we? Let's do it. So now we're inside, Dennis, and of course, beautiful space. I'm drawn immediately to this fireplace structure, right?
And that's intentional, right? You would have arrived as a guest, come in this door, we've just come in.
Mm-hmm.
There's sort of a processional up the steps, and here's a nice warm fireplace welcoming you. But look at the work around it. Look at that tile work.
Really? We're seeing all these colors, first of all, red, blue, yellow, and lots of circles.
In this overlapping
right.
oval pattern. Yeah, it's really wonderful. And what I understand is that we're going to talk about the differences between the Wright details and the Sullivan details. This is very clearly a Sullivan detail.
Ah, okay. But look up, though, Dennis, because it looks like a repeat of the patterns that we just saw outside.
Some of the patterns we saw outside, yeah. And we also have the sun coming down on us through this atrium. This is such a... Remember, we're in a very narrow house. Remember what you saw outside.
That's right.
This is not a very wide house, but we're in this great sunny courtyard
just
as if we're in sort of a European
in
villa.
The midst of a skylight.
So you go up, and we talked about these rotated squares when we saw them outside, and then go farther, and that screen across the staircase, that's something you see in so many Frank Lloyd Wright houses, is there's a staircase that's concealed but not concealed.
Mm.
One of the differences here, I was told, is you can't quite see it from where we're standing, but they're not just pieces of wood. They're pieces of wood with beaded trim on them. So they've been made a little more upscale than what would appear in some of the other houses.
I mean, I'm curious, what do you know about these concealed staircases? I'm so intrigued.
Well, I think it was one of those things that
like
Wright
his signature?
Did. Yeah, it's so that as you're walking through a house, there you see something you ought to approach.
Like, ooh,
but
what's behind that?
Yeah, exactly. And there's a house in Hyde Park, the Heller House, where rather than seeing this fireplace when you walked in, you'd see that semi-concealed staircase.
Oh,
it's
cool.
Really interesting. You know, so our kids are coming down in their Halloween costumes. People are coming down in gowns, that sort of thing. And it's sort of like a light show, a flicker show as they pass along it.
Very cool. So lots to explore inside this building. So I'll let you take the lead. Where should we go next?
Let's go into the study here, the library.
Wow. Immediately, I'm drawn to the light fixture. Nice oval.
It's modern, but there's something interesting when you look at it. Turn your back to these arches. There are all these arches. Again, we're in this narrow space, but it's opened up because there are all these arches with layered views through. They're semicircular. This light fixture, which is modern, not part of the original design, picks up on it. But look at how we're surrounded here with books and then with another beautiful
fireplace.
What are we, about 10 steps from that first one?
That's right.
And then this has all this beautiful, this is the kind of Lewis Sullivan ornamentation you see if you go to the old Carson's store, if you go to the now the Sullivan Center on State Street. This would be rendered in metal, but here it's wood.
The continuity with the circular shapes and the arches, it's really striking.
Well, one of the things I like is that it keeps your eye moving through the house.
Yeah.
Right? You're always, if you were sitting here, it's used as a library, but if you were sitting here reading or sharing a cup of coffee or something, there's always something to look at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it looks like the design on the glass kind of matches that tiling we were seeing on the first fireplace.
More of that continuity, more of that sort of idea that every room is different. This room is obviously different from the foyer, but it all hangs together as one composition.
Well, you know what, Dennis? I am so intrigued by the story you just told a moment ago. I kind of want to go upstairs, if you don't mind, just to kind of see all that up close.
Sure, let's go.
Okay, great. Wow, so we're on what, the second floor?
We're on the second floor. And so here you can see that beading I was talking about on the screen.
And take a look behind us, Dennis. Again, circles, right? That continuity.
Circles in the glass. You see those in some other Wright houses. Mm. You see it in the Blossom House in Kenwood, which he did a little bit later than this. But take a look at this porch. Remember, I described it as an urban front porch.
Right.
To me, the best thing is, first of all, you're lifted up off the street.
Yes, that's a bonus for sure.
But you've got this privacy. And it also, I mean, the way it flows in and out, you've got light coming through between the columns and the glass, mm-hmm. and then in here we've got the staircase screen and all this tattooed wood, patterned wood around the balcony.
Again, more fine details.
Yeah, it's really amazing. Again, your eyes would be moving all through the house, and no matter how long you lived here, you'd always be discovering something more.
Do you know what I find? We're on the second floor, as we mentioned, but this house makes me keep wanting to look up. Like, I want to see what's next, what's on the third floor, what's...
Well, I think that has a lot to do with this center atrium.
Yeah.
With the skylight hanging overhead.
Absolutely.
It's really wonderful that it, I mean, not only does it bring light down, but as you say, it pulls
your eye up.
It
makes you
want
to look all the way up, up to the top.
Going back to the screen, these pieces on the floor we're on are, say, about 8 feet high, mm-hmm. and then above they're about 4 feet high. So the building feels as if it's climbing.
Yeah, visually very stunning.
Hey, if you just got here, welcome. This is Reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. And for our What's That Building series, we're taking a tour of the Charnley Persky House in the Gold Coast. It's a striking rectilinear structure designed by Frank Lloyd Wright and Louis Sullivan. And at the table to share more on the Charnley Persky House is none other than Dennis Rodkin himself, Crane Chicago Business residential real estate reporter and Reset's favorite architecture sleuth. Welcome back, Dennis.
Hi, Sasha.
Good to see you again. It's been so long.
Just a few days. This is great.
Just a few days ago.
So, Dennis, lots of focus there, of course, on the architecture when we were on site. But we don't know much about the family. So what should we know about James and Helen Charnley, who built the house?
Well, one of the things that I think is interesting is that they had already worked with Louis Sullivan. Louis Sullivan owned some property in Gulf Shores, Mississippi, designed himself a home, and then designed a home for the Charnleys.
Mm-hmm.
So they're existing clients for him. And they come along and say, now we're going to build something a little bigger, a little showier in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Now, an architecture firm eventually buys and renovates the house because the Charnleys only lived there for what?
The Charnleys were there for a decade. And then, so the house was built in 1892. They're out in 1902. About 85 years passes. 1986, Skidmore, Owings, and Merrill buys it to put their foundation in there. But before putting the foundation in the building, they do a massive restoration. The house is approximately a century old at that time, and they bring it back.
There are
great pictures on their website from 1986 of how they really had to rebuild almost the entire interior of the house.
So I bet it looks very different.
One of the problems we learned from Ann Bird from the Society of Architectural Historians, which is officed there now, is that there are no original photos. They don't really know what the colors might have been, how the light fell, those sorts of things that you would get from a photo. So a lot of the reconstruction was really just from drawings,
mm-hmm.
from original drawings of the building.
I see. So I got to ask, who's the Persky in Charnley Persky, and how did they get involved?
Seymour Persky was a preservationist and attorney. Skidmore, again, had been in there since 1986, but they're moving their foundation out of the building, and so the building is going to go unused. Seymour Persky is a preservationist in Chicago. The Society of Architectural Historians is in Philadelphia. He arranges to buy the building and move the Architectural Historians Organization into the building.
Okay.
That's in 1995, and now for about 30 years, they have been headquartered in a pretty important piece of architectural history.
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned, we were not alone on our tour last week, Dennis. Ann Hill Bird was there. She is the Charnley Persky House tour manager. She showed us around and we picked her brain a little, or maybe a lot, right? And here's where she starts off by showing us where we can see hints of both of these designers' work as we go throughout the house.
I think the best example of that is probably on our newel post over here. What you can see on the newel post is Louis Sullivan's trademark leaves that we see actually all over the house. And then you see a very sort of geometric circle and square behind, which eventually becomes Frank Lloyd Wright's logo. So this is an example of both of them, one starting the design, one completing it.
And tell me a little bit about why Wright would have completed it. Wright's a young hotshot in Sullivan's office, mm-hmm. right? He's a draftsman. He's really there to carry out the leader's work. But Sullivan was pretty busy, you told me earlier.
Sullivan was most likely working on the Chicago Stock Exchange at the time, which was a very, very large project. And it was probably a huge scale project compared to this house. This house was a private commission from Mr. and Mrs. Charnley to Louis Sullivan, who was a personal friend of theirs. So we do know that Sullivan used to turn over details to Wright to complete. You know what I want, just do it. Which we do see touches of Wright around the house. The scholars are all over the map. Frank Lloyd Wright wrote in his autobiography that he was the sole author of this house, but we see so much of Sullivan here, especially in the floor plan, the arches, and a lot of other details that we see in other Sullivan buildings that we don't think that was really the entire truth. And then again, you know, in a lot of architecture firms, the associates do the work, and the boss's name goes on the job.
But it's also true that the Sullivan was working for the Charnleys, who were family friends, right?
And he absolutely
had done a home for them next to his in Gulf Shores, Mississippi. So Wright, ambitious Frank Lloyd Wright, saying, I did the whole thing, is maybe an exaggeration.
I would think so.
So let's talk about the arches. I was talking to Sasha about all these arches and how you get these layered views of rooms because there are so many arches, but some of them are not actual doorways, they're insets. Standing here in the foyer, we see two.
Oh, yes, that's right.
One in the landing and one next to the fireplace. And you were talking to me about a difference as we go upstairs. Why are there inset arches like this, do you think?
I think they reflect, they give some depth to the house. They also reflect all of the other geometry around this floor, because on this first floor, we see a lot of rounded arches. The geometry completely changes on the second floor, where it becomes much more angular. And as we get further up in the house, you talked earlier about climbing up through the house. And as we get higher up, as the space gets more private, the ceiling comes down.
And then these insets also go from rounded, arched, to rectilinear.
Yes, they do.
I'm curious about your tours that you conduct here. I mean, what are some of the most interesting questions people ask, or just like the most exciting part of the house to show folks?
Well, we focus really on the architecture here. There are many house museums that focus more on the family or the social history of the family that lived there. We're pretty much a sticks and bricks tour, really focused more on really the architecture and the intention.
But another reason to focus on the sticks and bricks is look at this place.
Gorgeous.
Right? I mean, yeah. There aren't many sticks and bricks tours that could get into the level of beauty that we
see
here.
So many stories to tell just from what we're looking at. Yeah, anything to add, Dennis? I mean, Anne gave us a lot there, but anything to add about Wright, Sullivan, and just how their work really comes together in the space?
Well, one of the things I think we should point out, I referred to Wright as a young hotshot in Sullivan's office. Frank Lloyd Wright was 24 years old.
Yes.
Louis Sullivan is 35. That's not a big gap, but
yeah.
Sullivan was very established. He's done some very important buildings, and he's gotten this nice commission. Wright is a young draftsman. Clearly, we now know Frank Lloyd Wright believed that he was headed for the top,
mm-hmm.
and was very ambitious. So he may have later in life decided, I did that whole thing. When that autobiography was published that Anne referred to, where he says he was the author of the building,
yeah.
Sullivan was already dead. Sullivan had been dead for about 8 years when that was published. So there, he wasn't really there to defend himself and say, hang on, you were working for me at that time.
Right. So Frank Lloyd Wright got to sort of say whatever he wanted to.
Say what he wanted about what he had done. And Anne made it clear they don't really know. It's not as if now when you're working in layers on a computer screen, it would your initials would be on what you did. My initials would be on what I did in the different layers, not that they'd show up in the building. So it would be possible to see that I was taking credit for your work. Not possible with this building, but if Wright said he had done it, that sort of changes the tone. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting now is coming forward many years, we now believe, and the Society of Architectural Historians says on all of its materials, that Wright and Sullivan were working together. But it's got this crazy story where it seems to have been the one man's commission, but the other man takes credit.
Very interesting. I'm still thinking about that rooftop skylight that
we
saw. That was really, really well done.
Yeah, really nice.
Really
that it brings
well
light
done.
All the way down. And as I said when we were there, you're in a pretty narrow space. In an urban house like that without the skylight, you could feel really cramped. And also without that loggia we looked at where you come out from the second floor. Without that, because you're on that narrow site, they would have felt that they were indoors all the time.
Yeah, it would have definitely felt like you were sort of trapped.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. That's Crane, Chicago Business residential real estate reporter, and Reset's architecture guru, Dennis Rodkin. Great stuff.
Thanks, Sasha. This was fun.
This episode of the Reset podcast was produced and mixed by me, Sasha Ann Simons, and Ethan Schwab. Reset's here to help you understand and fall in love with Chicago. For more conversations like this, make sure you're subscribed to the podcast. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll meet again later this afternoon.